the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Our guest for the Culture Club today is Jess Cav, who's one of the musicians performing live in Kishoc, an embodied manifesto, which the Catherine Young Dance Company has been touring nationally since the 18th of April. The final two performances are at the Pavilion Theatre in Dunleary tomorrow as part of the Dublin Dance Festival, and in Glore, County Clare on Saturday. So, further information from CatherineYoungDance.com. But let's get a brief taster of the music featuring Jess on vocals, which soundtracks the dancing in Kishoc. Okay, Jess, thanks for joining us. Tell us all about this. What is this?
So Kishoc is this wonderful piece, a dance piece by Catherine Young. Kishoc means mess, Osgailge, but it also means a path over uneven terrain. So the show inherently is about finding our way back to our initial wisdom as we are in this world. There's a lot going on. It's a bit of a mess. And the show is, it starts in this place of disconnect. And as we continue on with the show, we come to a place of restoration and a place of connection. So it's a beautiful piece.
What type of dancing? Is it Irish dancing or is it?
It is contemporary dance, but it does lean a lot with some folk, and there will definitely be lots of dancing in it that will be familiar for sure.
Was the music written specifically for this?
Yes, it was. Yeah. So there's two singers on it. So there's myself and there's another wonderful singer called Micheál O'Doul, who is a Shannó singer and a fiddle player. And then the musical director is Martin Scherer. So we have a full live band, which is amazing. And also Senan Brennan from Keela is in it. We'll give you an idea of what kind of music it is. So it's kind of a mix of folk and modern and I guess world. And one of the things I love about it so much is that I don't really have any lyrics. So when I improvise, I can really, really go for it, you know, and it changes every night depending on the kind of vibe with the dancers and kind of where we are at. So it really, really moves. So every night is a little bit different, which I love.
Is this the type of thing you normally do?
No, nobody gives me the opportunity to do this. usually, you know, with songs, what I did before this, I was on tour with Billy Idol as his backing vocalist. So that's what
really?
I was doing.
Billy Idol's still on the go. I'm amazed he's still alive, given the excess and hedonism of his life, as he detailed in his autobiography.
Yes, well, yeah, Billy Idol should be dead. It's just out right now. But yeah, so that's what I was doing, that in South America up until November. And then
What was that like?
It was incredible. Yeah, it was really, really amazing. So going from like, you know, a stadium tour, you know, singing Rebel Yell to coming to this has been really, really beautiful. And I'm really grateful that I get to have so much range. And Catherine has been such a huge champion of mine for many, many years. And when we work together and when I work with the musical director, Martin Scherer, you know, the way that I'm directed is kind of like, it's emotion. It's like, here, I want you to feel disconnected. Can you do something with your voice that sounds disconnected? Here, I want you to do something that's like deeply energetic. I want to feel love, or I want to feel joy, or I want to feel power. So that's kind of how I'm directed, and I really, really love that.
But tell us a bit more about your career, because you write your own materials, do you, as well?
Yes, I do.
And you do spoken word.
Uh-huh.
So tell us a bit about how all that has gone for you.
It's going really well at the moment. I took a bit of a step back, just trying to figure out what the next step is. I kind of released some music, and it didn't go as well as I liked. And I found that the streaming service system and the current systems of in the music industry are kind of difficult for me. So I ended up writing this body of music, and I wrote a play around it called Fermented Dreams. So I did that in 2024. And since then, I've been enjoying writing music. I got the Arts Council Music Bursary. So as I say, I've been kind of paying myself to fail, if you will, and experimenting with different things. But I'll have my music out pretty soon.
Yeah, but you've also worked, haven't you, with South Dublin County Council, sort of in community activities.
Community arts, yeah. I love community arts. One of the things I love about community arts is, you know, I really see people's confidence in real time, which I think is fantastic. So when you work with kids and they come in and sometimes they seem a little bit nervous or their confidence is quite low, you know, by an hour or 2 hours, it's like they change completely. And to see that is just so rewarding. I love it so much.
Okay, let's get your choices for the Culture Club and find out more. First single that you have a memory of, or first piece of music, what is it?
I can't believe I've put this down. But it was true. It's definitely like Emanate, which was, you know, the time of like R&B, Brit. You know, you had like Emanate, you had Damage, you had Another Level, and that's what I was growing up in at the time. So this, my first single that I bought on tape in HMV was I've Got a Little Something For You by Emanate.
Okay, I've just been looking that up. That's from 1995. It actually went to number two in the British charts.
It was huge, yeah. It was, well, you know what? I think when it came out, my memory of it was they had baggy pants and they had their boxers up high. And I think as a girl, that did a lot for me.
Were they sort of the big boy band of the time?
They were kind of like an R&B boy band. Yeah, yeah. So they were, I really liked that at the time.
And did you stick with that type of music?
I was really into boy bands at the time. Yes, I was big into Take That. I was big into Emanate. I was big into Damage. I was big into the Backstreet Boys. I just loved pop at that age when I was about 8 or 9. Yeah.
Okay. Now, your favourite album is one that we've had before from a number of guests on the Culture Club. Mm. And this is one that was probably out way before you were born.
Yes.
Stevie Wonder, Songs in the Key of Life. Uh-huh. Now, tell us why you've gone for this.
So I was in a gospel choir with Sean Gilligan and Maureen Gilligan's drama group, Grant Drama Show, when I was, maybe about 14 or 15. And we had a gospel choir and it was kind of like we used to do some gigs and it was great. This was all kind of based in Coolock and it was one of my absolute joys at that age. And of course, we had seen Sister Act 2 and that was the thing that we loved. We just wanted to do a happy day and all that kind of stuff. And I remember my mother at the time, my mother was big into her soul and she was a massive, massive music fan and a huge influence for me as well. And she kind of, I don't know, scolded me one day and she was like, you need to stop doing a happy day and you need to do these songs. And she showed me Songs in the Key of Life and the first song on Songs in the Key of Life, which is Love's in Need of Love Today. And it has this kind of beautiful vocals on it. And I became obsessed with it. And of course, then I robbed it off her and ruined the CD. But it just became something that I lived in. And one of the things that's kind of consistent with everything that I've kind of put up on, that I've kind of offered today has been that, like, it's stuff that I get to come back to all the time. And as I grow, it kind of almost grows with me and I get to kind of find new and different things. And it's one of those albums that's just stayed with me for years. I'm constantly inspired by it. And it's so lyrical, which I love. And like Catherine as well, you know, Stevie Wonder is not necessarily known for this in the mainstream, but like he's such an incredible social commentator.
And we'll talk more about that in a moment. But let's hear a little bit from Songs in the Key of Life, Sir Duke.
Yes.
All understand with an equal
Okay.
He caught me. He caught me singing the riff.
That's okay. That's okay. And you have Stevie Wonder as your favourite artist.
Yes.
As well. Tell us a bit more about why.
Yeah, Stevie Wonder, as I was saying, he's such an incredible social commentator. I remember when I got the vinyl for Hotter Than July, you know, you open up the vinyl and it's the civil rights riots. You know, you think of Hotter Than July and some people think of Happy Birthday to You and the songs that are, you know, about kind of joy and whimsy. And he absolutely has so much of that. But also some of my favorite songs of Stevie Wonder are the ones that, you know, are talking about political manipulation and talking about race and talking about things that are incredibly important to him. And I think he does it so beautifully because obviously he makes it so funky and he makes it so beautiful to listen to. But if you listen to the lyrics, there's so much going on. There's so much depth. And I think that's why I love him so much.
Well, let's hear another Stevie Wonder track. This is probably one that he may be best known for, Superstition.
Yeah, yeah. But if you believe in the things that you don't understand, then you suffer. So he's saying some stuff, you know.
Tell us more about that.
Yeah, well, so that album is Talking Buck. He is on the drums. I think he's doing most of the instrumentation on that, which is just mind-blowing. He's such a genius. And what I love about this song with Superstition is that actually it goes directly into a song called Big Brother, which is about media manipulation and, you know, kind of Orwellian stuff. So once again, he kind of starts kind of getting you into it and it's kind of groovy and it's kind of fun and it's funky, but then he kind of hits you with some knowledge. And I love that about Stevie Wonder. He's amazing.
Okay, it strikes me that he probably blazed a trail that Prince was able to then come in afterwards doing all his own instruments and things like that as
Absolutely,
well.
Absolutely, 100%, yeah.
Okay, did you ever see him in concert?
No. Oh, no, I did. Yes, I did in the O2 in 2010, I think. So it was a good while ago. But he's been doing Songs in the Key of Life. I think he did it in Hyde Park about 2 years ago and I missed it and that will probably haunt me forever.
Okay, best gig you were ever at?
So when I think of live music and when I think of live music excellence, I always think of Wallace Bird, who is one of our own. She's absolutely incredible. She's, as far as I'm concerned, I think she's one of the best artists and certainly one of the best live artists to ever come out of Ireland. And I've been lucky enough to be seeing her perform live since possibly like 2004, 2005. And the first band I was in, the first original band, was a funk band called Creamy Goodness. And nobody knew where to put us because we were a funk band in Ireland in 2005. But they were at Ballyfermot Rock School at the same time that Wallace Bird was at Ballyfermot Rock School. So I got to see her really, really young. And I remember just kind of sitting and looking up onto the stage and just thinking, this person is like my idol. And even though she's my friend, I think I still see her as an idol as well. But one of the gigs that I always think of when I think of absolute live excellence is, she did a couple of gigs in The Ambassador and they just blew my mind. And they're still, I still consider them some of the best.
That was from back around 2017, was it?
Around that time, yeah.
Well, I don't think, maybe it wasn't that year, but actually it's, we don't have from The Ambassador an example of Wallace Bird live. This is from live in Vienna in 2017, which is why I used that year.
Beautiful.
And this is the track called Love.
Ah,
From Wallace Bird, who I was just checking, she did this spot, Culture Club, exactly 2 years ago, this week, 2 years ago.
Oh, way. There you go. Yeah.
And she's been a guest a number of times on the programme. She has the most magnificent voice.
She absolutely does. And, you know, the way that she holds an audience, it's almost shamanic, you know what I mean? But also so much fun as well. And I think you always leave her shows just on a high. And that's why they always stick with me.
A listener as well texting in saying about how you mentioned about Stevie Wonder's social conscience and sort of politicism, that one of his best known songs, Happy Birthday to You, is about Martin Luther King's birthday. And it's now a national holiday in America, thanks in part to that song.
There you go. Yeah, he's an incredible guy. I think, which is the 18th of January, which is really close to my birthday. So I always like to feel like it's a little bit about me too.
Let's go to movies. We asked for a favourite movie, actor or director. What are you giving us?
Okay, so I have to be very, very honest, and I'm not a huge movie person. I feel like this is something I need to be better at as I get a little bit older. But one of the movies that has always stuck with me is The Matrix. I love it. And it's, as I said before, it's one of those pieces that, you know, I went to see in the cinema when I was 13 and it blew my mind. And now that I'm older than that, I still watch it, and it still gives me something new all the time. And I think it's really stood the test
of time. In what way?
I think now that I'm a bit older, one of the narratives and the themes that I love about The Matrix is about kind of relinquishing the kind of the shackles of these systems that we have to kind of navigate within. And maybe for me as an artist, like, you know, having to use social media and, you know, having to use streaming services and all these things, I kind of resent and I feel are like deeply exploitative. You know, to know that there is another way, and that we can find a way for our mind to expand and our consciousness to expand. And I think at this moment in time, when I watch The Matrix, I think of mind expansion and consciousness expansion. And I think it does that really beautifully.
Okay.
There is no spoon.
Let's get a clip where Neo is offered the choice between the blue pill and the red pill.
Oh, there we go.
It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
What truth?
That you are a slave, Neo. Like everyone else, you were born into bondage, born into a prison that you cannot smell or taste or touch. A prison for your mind. Unfortunately, no one can be told what the Matrix is. You have to see it for yourself. This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill, the story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes. Remember, all I'm offering is the truth, nothing more.
The Matrix. You always gave us Sinners, though.
Yes, I watched Sinners recently and I just thought it was absolutely incredible as well.
It's great fun, actually, isn't it, The Matrix?
It's so, so fun. Sinners is incredible. And, you know, I don't want to give too much away, but, like, you know, also because I'm mixed race as well. So my grandfather is Nigerian. And so to see a light passing character as well being represented and to kind of show the complexity of that identity was really lovely. And to see that actually in mainstream movies was great. So that was lovely. I felt very seen.
Okay. play, theatre show, musical, anything to offer us?
Yes, so I started off in drama school when I was younger. As I said, that gospel choir was a part of a stage school as well. So I was in musicals before I was in live music. And I went over to visit a good friend of mine, Steph McKeown, who back in the 20 teens maybe, and she got cheap tickets to go see Gypsy with Imelda Staunton, and I wasn't 100% convinced, and I didn't even know anything about the musical. And it is a performance that I still think about probably every month. Imelda Staunton is just incredible. Her voice and also that character of the mother is just such an incredible character as well, but she plays her so beautifully, and it's something that I think about regularly.
Let's hear Imelda Staunton performing Everything's Coming Up Roses from Gypsy. Amazing. At the Olivier Awards in 2016.
Starting here, starting now, honey, everything's coming up roses. Clear the decks, clear the tracks. You got nothing to do but relax. Blow a kiss, take a bow, honey, everything's coming up roses. Now's your inning, stand the world on its ear, set it spinning, that'll be just the beginning. Curtain up, light the lights, you've got nothing to hit but the heights. You'll be swell, you'll be great, I can tell, just you wait. That lucky star I talk about is dirt. Honey, everything's coming up roses for me and for you.
Okay, Imelda Staunton there.
Yes.
In Gypsy at the Olivier Awards. You also had a mention for something called Hedwig and the Angry Itch.
That would be Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Yes. Inch, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. It's an excellent, an amazing musical. I would have gotten really into it. The movie that came out, I think, in the early 2000s. I would have watched a lot during college. And it's a story of a trans woman who has her sex change in Eastern Europe, and the sex change operation is botched. But she finds her way over the Berlin Wall into the West, finds her way to America, marries a GI, and then the GI leaves her. And so she's left with significant health problems and kind of abandoned in America. And so she sets up a punk band. And the punk band is with other people who are kind of rejected from kind of the Soviet world. And then, of course, after she's done all these things, then the Berlin Wall falls. So it was kind of all in vain. And so she sets up this punk band called Hedwig and the Angry Inch. And that's what the musical is about. And it is one of my favourite things of all time.
OK. Favourite book or author?
So I gave you a lot of options here.
You
because
did.
I did. yeah, because I love memoirs. Memoirs is one of the things that I read and listen to. Actually, I listen to a lot of books now. Patrick Stewart was one I particularly loved recently, just because I was so surprised how working class he was, because of his voice. And he's, you know, he's this kind of amazing Shakespearean actor, but he's a working class guy from Yorkshire. And then, of course, for fiction, I recently read My Year of Rest and Relaxation, which then kind of really inspired my play, Fermented Dreams. And that's by Otessa Moshfegh, and it's an incredible book.
Well, we actually have a little bit from the opening chapter of it.
Amazing.
Whenever I woke up, night or day, I'd shuffle through the bright marble foyer of my building and go up the block and around the corner where there was a bodega that never closed. I'd get two large coffees with cream and six sugars each, chug the first one in the elevator on the way back up to my apartment, then sip the second one slowly while I watched movies and ate animal crackers and took trazodone and Ambien and Nembutal until I fell asleep again. I lost track of time in this way. Days passed. Weeks. A few months went by. When I thought of it, I ordered delivery from the Thai restaurant across the street, or a tuna salad platter from the diner on First Avenue. I'd wake up to find voice messages on my cell phone from salons or spas confirming appointments I'd booked in my sleep. I always called back to cancel, which I hated doing, because I hated talking to people. Early on in this phase, I had my dirty laundry picked up and clean laundry delivered once a week. It was a comfort to me to hear the torn plastic bags rustle in the draft from the living room windows. I liked catching whiffs of the fresh laundry smell while I dozed off on the sofa.
Tell me more about this.
So this book, I think, really resonated with me because as I get a bit older, I was experiencing quite severe perimenopause. And perimenopause for me also included blackouts. It included a loss of memory and a year and also depression and despair and all this stuff. And I'm very lucky that I found somebody that put me on HRT and I'm doing a lot better. But at the time I wasn't, and I was just kind of trying to muddle through with perimenopause and not really understanding what was happening to my body. And this book was just fantastic in a way that it talked about depression in a way that was very, very open and very raw and very unapologetic. And also how she seemed so okay with taking all these drugs and just having these blackouts and finding herself in these incredibly strange moments and the vulnerability of doing it despite the fact that she didn't remember it. And I guess for me, it's kind of, where is accountability if you don't remember? And what is a part of our identity if we don't remember what we do and all this kind of stuff? So I found the whole book really, really fascinating.
My year of rest and relaxation. Okay. Television. You love telly, I believe.
I have always been a telly addict. I used to get up at 5 a.m. before everybody woke up in order to watch telly when I was about 8 years old. And I've always, since then, still been a telly addict. One of the first things my family used to always slag me off about is, I would say when I was three, was Wewind the Video, which was the video of Mary Poppins that I used to watch on repeat all the time. So I am a complete telly addict, yes.
But you're giving us as your favourite BoJack Horseman.
Yes, oh God.
This is an animation, isn't it?
Yes, staying under the theme of depression. BoJack Horseman is amazing. And I think, you know, sometimes when we look at things that are quite heavy hitting, like depression and addiction and recovery and accountability and difficult behaviours and also fame and performance and trauma, you know, when we have that buffer zone of humor or cartoons or, you know, the whimsy of seeing it being acted out through animals, I think it just kind of allows it to sit a little bit easier, or sometimes through musicals as well. And BoJack Horseman is excellent at doing that.
Let's just hear a clip where BoJack, voiced by Will Arnett, who I think was also in... Oh, this will come back to me.
Yes, and also very open about his own recovery process as well, which is why
he was Arrested Development.
Yes, he was.
Terrific. Arrested
Incredible,
Development.
Yeah.
Okay, he is BoJack, and here he's speaking at his mother's funeral.
Creature, oh yeah.
I stopped at a Jack in the Box on the way here, and the girl behind the counter said, "Hiya, are you having an awesome day?" Not, "How are you doing today?" No, "Are you having an awesome day?" Which is pretty shitty because it puts the onus on me to disagree with her. Like, if I'm not having an awesome day, suddenly I'm the negative one. Usually when people ask how I'm doing, the real answer is I'm doing shitty. But I can't say I'm doing shitty because I don't even have a good reason to be doing shitty. So if I say I'm doing shitty, then they say, "Why? What's wrong?" And I have to be like, I don't know, all of it. So instead, when people ask how I'm doing, I usually say, "I am doing so great." But when this girl at the Jack in the Box asked me if I was having an awesome day, I thought, well, today I'm actually allowed to feel shitty. Today I have a good reason. So I said to her, "Well, my mom died." And she immediately burst into tears. So now I have to comfort her, which is annoying. And meanwhile, there's a line of people forming behind me who are all giving me these real judgy looks because I made the Jack in the Box girl cry. And she's bawling and she's saying, "I'm sorry, I'm so sorry." And I'm like, "It's fine, it's fine. I mean, it's not fine, but, you know, it's fine. And I would like to order a double Jack meal, and I've kind of got somewhere to be, so maybe less with the crying and more with the frying, huh?" And the girl apologizes again, and she offers me a free churro with my meal. And as I'm leaving, I think, I just got a free churro because my mom died. No one ever tells you when your mom dies, you get a free churro. Anyway.
That's very good.
It's very good. And this is all happening, by the way, at his mother's eulogy. So this is why he's saying all this. And in my opinion, that particular episode is just him at his mother's funeral doing the eulogy. And that's 30 minutes is just him speaking. And I think it's still one of the best monologues in
mainstream television that I've ever seen. It's an incredible, incredible 30 minutes of television.
I'm not sure we're going to get time to play a clip from your last choice, your buried treasure, which is another TV show.
Yes, yes. So buried treasure. So my buried treasure is a show called Forever, and it's with Fred Armisen and Maya Rudolph. And I think I found it on Amazon. I was just looking for something to watch one day, and it's only about two seasons. It's quite short, but it's about love, and it's about the afterlife, and it's about death, and it's about, I don't think I'm really selling this, but it is beautiful, and it's a slow burn about what happens when we pick somebody and then we end up with them forever, even into the afterlife. You know, how does that work out? So it's really, really beautiful, and I think it's done wonderfully. And there's something about Maya Rudolph's character that I just think is fantastic. She's so kind and she's really gentle. And yeah, it's really comforting and relaxing to watch.
That's Forever on Prime Video. Jess Cav, it's been fantastic having you for the Culture Club. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Kishok is on tomorrow in the Pavilion Theatre in Dunleary as part of the Dublin Dance Festival, and in Glore in County Clare on Saturday evening.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.